Hello, everyone. Today is July 2nd, 2013, and welcome to the Open Ontology Repository Metadata Workshop number 8. My name is Michael Gruninger, and together with Mike Bennett, we will be your hosts today. The idea for today's session is to look at FIBO, the Financial Industry Business Ontology, and to investigate how it can be incorporated within the overall work and mission of the Open Ontology Repository Initiative. So for today, we will have two presentations followed by an open discussion. First, Mike Bennett will give an overview of FIBO in terms of its various modules, and then I will follow up with some other notes and ideas looking at how FIBO is kind of decomposed into modules. The idea is that what we want to do is use FIBO as a kind of a test case for driving the identification of ontology metadata, particularly within the OOR. So first up, we will have Mike, and you can get these slides at purple number, is that Y? 3UYT are the slides on our session page. So Mike, would you like to start things off?
Thanks, Michael. So I'm just going to really briefly introduce FIBO. I won't go into much in the way of details, but just to give a sense of what we have, what our modularization policy has been, and where we are with the OMG process, which will result in OWL files for different FIBO standards, and a little look at the existing OMG ontology level metadata that we're using so far. So slide 2 is really what I'm just going to briefly cover. This is really just to introduce the conversation, and in fact Michael's slides have more detail on FIBO than my slides do, and particularly the dependency trail and so on, so I won't repeat those things here. Slide 3 then, introducing FIBO. So Financial Industry Business Ontology, as the name suggests, it's explicitly a conceptual model, a business level ontology, not an operational OWL ontology, but it is framed in the syntax of OWL. And there are really two phases in FIBO, because we initially created it using a UML tool and using a profile defined by the object management group called the ontology definition metamodel, so that we could frame the concepts in FIBO using the syntax of OWL, but using different modeling than OWL models. And so we've not used all of what is in OWL, but we've used OWL classes and object properties and so on. And we explicitly define these as modeling things in the real world, i.e. not digital resources or data elements or anything like that, but actual securities, derivatives, transactions, business entities, and so on. The first of the FIBO specifications that we've been bringing to the object management group is FIBO business entities, which is intended to capture the nature and meaning of the different kinds of legal entities, incorporated and unincorporated formal organizations. And as with all of FIBO, the meanings of the concepts are grounded in much more atomic legal concepts like obligations and contracts and agreements and so on. We also have a specification called FIBO Foundations. I'll explain a bit of that in a moment, but Foundations essentially provides a fairly small set of foundational terms, like those atomic terms I mentioned, like agreements and contracts and so on. At the moment, what's in FIBO Foundations provides only the foundational terms for FIBO business entities, and then future iterations of Foundations will include similar material that's required for the foundational terms for securities and derivatives and other industry concepts. So at the moment, what we are looking at and what's becoming available in OWL through the object management group process is business entities and foundations, and then some of the others will follow in the coming months. So slide four, just as a bit of background, this doesn't directly affect FIBO standard itself, but it's part of our roadmap. I mentioned that FIBO is a business ontology or a conceptual ontology. So what we're standardizing is not operational OWL ontologies for specific reasoning applications. And at the same time as we standardize the FIBO conceptual ontologies, we will produce one or two reference operational ontologies to show how one can derive the one from the other. So FIBO as a set of conceptual ontologies is intended to be use case neutral. It's intended to define all the concepts there in the language of the business. So as I mentioned, terms are formally grounded in legal concepts, accounting concepts, and so on, right down to these formal abstractions that are in the foundations ontology. Operational ontologies are intended to be created on a use case specific basis, and that's where you would optimize the ontology for, you know, reasoning performance or for semantic querying applications. That's also where a number of rules are added, particularly for classifications that can't be expressed in the logic of OWL itself. And a lot of stuff around mapping to other ontologies and so on. The basic, the core content of the conceptual ontology, the classes and properties and their definitions and their namespaces and so on, which are part of the conceptual ontology, are used in the operational ontologies, which simply cut out the terms they don't need and make any necessary simplifications. But the same concepts that are in the conceptual ontology are deployed in the operational ontologies. This is important because what we're standardizing, while it is in OWL, is intended to be an OWL representation at the conceptual level, and therefore, firstly, it doesn't take into account any performance requirements or other application-specific requirements, and secondly, it has this grounding in these very atomic legal and accounting concepts, which may not all be needed in operational ontologies. In fact, some of the concepts that give something its meaning, like agreements and commitments and so on, don't directly correspond to data. They simply have object properties referencing them to things like contract terms, which do get expressed in data. So, of course, an operational ontology wouldn't expect to retain those concepts which formally ground the meaning of something but do not correspond to operational data. Slide five. So the next couple of slides we'll show a little bit of the breakdown of what's in these ontologies. I'll just explain the thinking behind foundations, because foundations is a strange one. It is all of the terms that are not really specific to financial securities at all. So rather than thinking of each industry as a vertical, when we look at something like a security or like a stock exchange or a deal or something like that, in order to express it semantically, we start by saying, what sort of thing is this? So what sort of thing is a share? Well, it's a kind of security. What sort of thing is a security? It's a kind of transferable contract. It's a contract that you can buy or sell one side of, i.e. that the holder's interest in it. Well, that's the kind of contract. The simplest kind of thing which it is a contract. The contracts are not specific to financial services. You know, rental agreements are also contracts and so on. So we found that by applying what is really the fundamental set theoretic principles of OWL, that you have classes which represent sets of which something could be a member, and by putting those in taxonomic hierarchies of simpler and simpler kinds of things, virtually everything in the financial realm, with perhaps one or two exceptions, is descended from something which is not unique to financial services. That's the taxonomic side. Also, of course, when we adds any kind of properties to classes to create the ontology. You know, for each kind of thing in the ontology, what are the properties that distinguish it from other things? This is how we define our taxonomic hierarchy of kinds of bond and kind of equity and so on. Many of those properties, these object properties, the object or the range of those object properties are typically also not unique to financial services. So most of the terms about a security will be things like the issuing jurisdiction, country of domicile, schedules of time and so on, fundamental accounting concepts like interest accrual, capital amounts and so on. So in order to even distinguish equity securities from debt securities, we have to distinguish equity from debt. Again, those are terms not unique to securities or to financial services, but are fundamental accounting terms. Similarly, when we look at derivatives, particularly over-the-counter derivatives, these are a de facto contract between parties, but that contract really represents a transaction between those two parties. And again, there are some very good academic work, the REA ontology, for example, on transaction concepts that relate the commitments exchanged between two parties to a transaction. Again, those are not in any way unique to financial services. And as we've dug into some of those, we've even gone deeper and found that many of the concepts, both for securities and for business entities, ultimately boil down to social constructs, things which are originated by linguistic acts, as defined in John Searle's ontology of social constructs. So basically, in order to define really meaningful definitions of almost anything in financial services, we've needed to identify abstractions and concepts to refer to as the ranges of object properties, which are not themselves unique to our industry. And that gives us an interesting challenge, because we want to find the meanings of those terms in the communities of practice that really understand that stuff. So lawyers, accountants, and so on. And so the challenge then with foundations is that we've needed to create these kind of almost temporary abstractions, which we then need to cross-reference to emerging work from other industry bodies, most of whom are not yet creating ontologies, but some of them, of course, are. So when we come to the loans ontology and we look at the MISMO messaging standard for loan terms, that makes a lot of reference to real estate terms, but there are already real estate ontologies from those communities of practice. Other areas like accounting and so on, there are not yet formal OWL ontologies for those. We've got the XBRL-GL model for accounting. We've got the REA ontology expressed in UML, but as an ontology for transactions. And so we anticipate the emergence of perhaps more formal ontologies for those things, but in the meantime we have these foundational terms. So slide six, the FIBO foundations ontology, I've just done a quick graphic of what are the different sections. So we've been encouraged by the OMG to modularize our ontologies as far as possible, so that when deriving operational ontologies, in many cases it could be possible to simply use the ontologies you need and not the ontologies you don't need. That won't always be possible, but it makes it a lot easier for folks to use the conceptual ontologies directly in an operational ontology application. So we've actually introduced a three-level structure. In the original UML model, this translates very nicely as UML packages, but the OWL language does not have a concept of a package. So we've introduced namespace fragments, which correspond to what we loosely call modules. And so here are the modules in the foundations ontology. We have common relations, we have roles, goals and objectives, agents and people, organizations, a lot of the stuff that was in the business entities ontology originally has been moved down into organizations as being more fundamental to organizations in general. And again, there's a need to more formally cross-reference that to the W3C organization ontology, which we haven't done and should. There's been some changes there that we need to catch up with. Agreements contains the more abstract concepts of agreement as well as contract and party and so on. We have a law module which contains three or four ontologies about law. We have control and ownership, and we have accounting. So in each of these modules that's represented in this graphic, there are one or two or three, maybe sometimes more, individual OWL ontologies, and they're grouped in these groupings based on a common namespace fragment. As I say, sort of corresponds to a module that can be thought of for organizing principles. And all of that is framed within this common business modeling framework, the underlying metadata that we use. In fact, there's two lots of metadata, and we'll come to that. There's the ontology level metadata, which we're using the OMG's specification metadata for, and then there is some unique element level metadata which we've developed as part of FIBO, and some of which is now being adopted as part of other OMG standards, some of which remains unique to FIBO. So that common framework then is defined in the foundation specification along with these modules for foundational terms. And when we introduce a new FIBO standards like derivatives, you'll see a new module here for transactions, for example, which will contain those REA transaction concepts. There's also a bunch of terms that are not in the OMG submission, but which are foundational semantics, like terms for addresses and identifiers and schemes and so on. Some of those we may end up bringing back into the OMG submissions, and some of which may not. And again, the reason they're not in the OMG scope is because those are terms which we would expect to find other ontologies that we can cross-reference to. So for country terms, we currently use the UNFAO ontology for a couple of basic country terms. The OMG folks want us to use ISO 3166, but that has no abstractions, so it's more of an extensional list of code lists than an intentional set of classes of kinds of things like country or territory or region or federal province or anything like that. So there's work to do on determining what's in scope and what's not, but this is what's currently in scope. Then slide 7, we have a similar picture for the FIBO business entity standard or specification. So each of the future specifications like securities and derivatives and so on will have a similar kind of structure to this. We'll have, you know, 6 or 8 or 10 individual modules, each of which would typically contain 3 or 4 fairly small, fairly well-defined ontologies, so that you can use individual ontologies on their own or whole modules on their own. If you're not interested in trust, you don't need the trust ontology. If you're looking at ownership hierarchies, you may not necessarily need the control ontologies and so on. So we have a bunch of modules in business entities. We're still working through some OWL architectural changes. In particular, we're replacing many of our object properties with restrictions on properties. So in the original version of the ontology, we had a large number of object properties, each of which is used once, and some very deep taxonomies of property. And in areas like control, this remains an important feature. You have, you know, general types of ownership and control. Then you have more and more specialized share ownership, voting share ownership, which is a kind of control relationship, and so on. So some quite deep hierarchies. But we're replacing many of those with restrictions on simpler, reusable object properties at the assistance of the OMG folks. And in some cases, we need to revisit some of those decisions, because sometimes, as in control, for example, the hierarchy of broader versus narrower meaningful relationships is actually quite an important one. So that's something we're still working through. So the Fibre Business Entities Ontology will follow this structure. It's not yet available in OWL in that new architecture. We're about three quarters of the way through working through that. Slide 8. So basically what we're doing is submitting our existing very large collection of ontologies and terms through the Object Management Group as a set of formal standards, with a formal written document, with machine-readable files and so on, all at the level of the conceptual ontology. The first wave, as I've just described, is the business entities and foundations. After that will come reference data terms for securities, derivatives and loans. And then later on we have a number of other terms. Again, these are all fairly extensive in the existing modeling framework, but need these architectural changes done to them, and more business review and updates, particularly corporate actions, where we need to incorporate some process terms from a good process modeling notation, market data, time dependent things. We have some very extensive terms on that, but we need to realign the temporal element of that with the OMG's date time vocabulary. And indeed, for securities and derivatives, wherever we need to describe schedules and so on, we also need to replace our current temporal terms with terms from the OMG date-time vocabulary, which itself doesn't yet exist in OWL. It's currently published as an SBVR vocabulary and not an OWL ontology, but by the time we are ready to publish securities and derivatives, we should hopefully have the OWL version of the OMG date-time vocabulary. So that's a good example of where our current temporary terms in foundations would need to be replaced by terms from a well-developed industry standard for those kinds of temporal terms. So the next few slides, I'm just quickly going to run through, starting with slide 9, the ontology level metadata that we currently have. So in section 9 of our written specification, we've split these up into several different sections, or three different sections, which are specification metadata, specification version metadata, and curation and rights metadata. These are all in one specification, which the OMG has defined, called specification metadata.owl. Until recently, this was some of this stuff was in FIBO and some wasn't defined. But from March this year, we see that the OMG Architecture Board has introduced this specification metadata.owl as a formal OWL ontology. It'll be interesting to see whether it overlaps or underlaps with the OMV vocabulary, or how it compares to that. So this is these next three tables are taken directly from the FIBO specification. So slide 10, the specification metadata has the title of the specification itself. You notice there's no module level for that intermediate level that I described. You've got specification level metadata, and in fact some ontology level metadata as well, which isn't in these tables. I should probably have captured that somewhere. But based again on the same specification metadata.owl ontology. So we have the title, the formal abbreviation, the URL for the thing, and an abstract for what's in that ontology. Slide 11 has the version-specific metadata. So this version, the URL for this version, and some blurb about the status and the management of it. And I see the stuff here about what it's been tested with and so on. I presume that's the standard stuff that would go in that specification version status thing. So this SM prefix you're seeing, that's the prefix for specification metadata.al. And there's also there housekeeping things like address the comments and so on. Slide 12, some other stuff that's also in specification metadata.al, and again this is basically including the header of all of the individual ontologies, but it's included as part of the specification level metadata, so it's exactly the same in each of the ontologies in FIDO-DE, and then exactly the same in each of the ontologies in FIDO Foundation and so on. So finally we have copyright. We have a fairly long license term which I've snipped out for brevity, a link to that license, and a link to the responsible task force. And notice that the license and the license link are not from SM, in fact, but from Dublin Core. So we've used those terms for that particular thing. Slide 13. We also have element level metadata. We've used SCoS terms wherever we could. So our definitions use SCoS definition. Our further notes that were taken during review sessions are captured as SCoS editorial notes, in some cases as scope notes, and a few others like change notes and so on. And we may make more use of SCoS change note in the future. There's also a proposal to add a couple of extra terms that are not in SCoS, but are subterms of the SCoS ones, but we haven't used those yet. Similarly, each of our terms and definitions, not so much in business entities, but very extensively in securities and derivatives, the terms that we have been reverse engineered from terms in logical or physical industry model standards such as ISO 20022 or FPML. And so we've either used or adapted the definitions from those. We've tracked when a given term, that could be a class or an object property or a data type property that's in FIBO, is put there because of their corresponding term in, say, FPML. So this is not mapping as such. There's a future requirement for mapping, for doing a complete mapping to FPML or a complete mapping to 20022. But rather, this is a acknowledgement of the provenance of a given term in FIBO. So for those, we've taken Dublin Core source and created four sub-properties of that. And these are all actually framed in FIBO as instances of our annotation properties, where the Dublin Core source and the sub-properties of that are defined as our annotation properties in FIBO. We also have synonyms, so each term has one label and then a number of synonyms using alt label, and then a number of things that are unique to FIBO, and these don't really exist yet because we tried various approaches in the existing modeling tool, and there's been a lot of changes in the ODM, the meta model that we're using, so we're actually going to reintroduce those in OWL directly, or in the new modeling tools that we're working towards, and that is classification facets and archetypes. So classification facets are where you have a number of different sets of subclasses of a given class. For example, a bond could be a municipal or corporate or sovereign bond. It can also be a fixed rate versus floating rate coupon. It can also be a bullet repayment versus amortizing principal repayment and so on. So we want to be able to identify those. And these simplest types of thing like contract and transaction and so on, we've defined as being what we call an archetype of those kinds of things. So that's most of our element level metadata. Looking back at this, I realized that I put in the specification metadata from the specification metadata.al, but there is also some ontology level metadata with a similar kind of content. There's been a lot of changes around that in the last couple of versions of the OWL, so that's still a little bit fluid. So that's really the background on what metadata we have, what FIBO is, what the current modules are, and so on. And that leads to a lot of open questions which we can discuss after we've had the next set of slides from Michael. So slide 14, I've just jotted down, and of course immediately after I've written this I thought of a bunch of other open questions. So the main things that we need to think about are how to align these slightly temporary or provisional abstractions that we've needed to create in order to define the more atomic concepts from which our terms are derived, how we align those to terms that are defined in the right communities of practice, so lawyers, accountants, and so on, depending on the kind of term. Some of those may already exist as ontologies, like the real estate ontologies that I mentioned. Many industries are still making the migration from physical message standards in XML to logical data models and are only starting to grasp the importance of ontologies, but clearly as time goes forward we would expect more industry standards to be published as ontologies, but they're not at the moment. So how do we deal with the evolution of the ontologies that exist and the emergence of more formal ontologies in the industry standards? And the flip side of that, particularly for business entities, how do we get others to reuse the concepts that we have? So a lot of the work, a lot of the changes that have been introduced during the OMG process has been to make fiber more reusable in insurance and other industries as well, because a business entity is a business entity. The forms of them are the same whether you're talking about them from a financial services point of view or from a trade or insurance or any other point of view. There's also questions around versioning. We've got a current open conversation about URIs that are version specific versus non-version specific and so on. And I mentioned that although we have provenance terms for our terms and definitions, that's not the same as having full mappings to existing logical or physical models in industry standards. So that's a bunch of questions. There's probably a few others we can think of, but I think we can hold that over to the discussion portion at this point. So I think, Michael, with that, can I hand back to you and take it from there?
Thank you, Mike. Yeah, and you mentioned you thought of a few other discussion points. So if you remember those where, you can always type them in the chat, and then we can return to them after in a few minutes.
Great, thanks.
Okay, so if people just click on the next slide deck. It's just a few slides. I really wanted to kind of keep this to be more of a kind of a workshop type session today. And so if you go to slide 2, I think what our challenge here is, so part of the challenge, as Mike was alluding to on his last slide there, was, you know, how do we integrate the FIBO, actually FIBO is this kind of set, modular set of ontologies, with the ontologies that we already have in some of the existing repositories, such as Calore or OntoHub or some of the other, the Sandbox, SOCOP and things like that we have within OR. And so the challenge is, how can we integrate FIBO with these other ontologies and then use this as a case study to extract requirements for ontology metadata in the repositories? And by ontology metadata, I'm not just talking about properties of an ontology, that kind of metadata, but also metadata that's looking at the relationships between ontologies. So if we move to slide 3, these are the three things I just wanted to kind of draw attention to. Mike's already covered a lot of the detail, but I just want to draw attention to three of these points. The first being the modularization of FIBO foundations. The second being mappings to other ontologies. And then the third being the more traditional, I guess you might call it, ontology metadata for describing particular ontologies within FIBO. So if you go to slide 4, so Mike has already said that kind of as part of the OMG process, FIBO Foundations was explicitly kind of tasked with the idea of kind of modularizing everything. And if you take a close look at the OWL maximizations of FIBO Foundations, you'll see it's very nicely organized via OWL imports. Now, so one question will be, it's kind of an open question from a research perspective here. Are these all modules of FIBO? So within the ontology community, there's a kind of a technical notion of what a module is. From a logical perspective, kind of a piece of an ontology is a module if the overall ontology is what's called a conservative extension of that particular kind of sub-ontology. And by conservative extension, what we mean is that you can't draw new inferences using only the terminology of that particular sub-ontology. So another way of looking at this is that if you look at the axioms of a particular sub-ontology and you look at all the conclusions you can make from that, within the context of the overall ontology, you're not really changing the semantics of those particular terms. And so this is kind of an open question. I think it is. Just kind of doing preliminary analysis, I think it is the case that they really are modules in the logical sense, on the ontological sense. And so this is something to look at in the future. On slide five, I've drawn a kind of a diagram that looks at how all the different sub-ontologies, all the different modules are related to each other. This is one level below what Mike showed on slide six. So these are the ontologies that comprise those larger pieces that Mike showed in slide six of his slide deck. And so these the arrows here represent this idea of imports, owl imports, and again, from an ontological perspective, I think it's looking at conservative extension. And so you see that there are five kind of primitive modules within FIBO foundations dealing with goals, addresses, agents, objectives, and currency amounts. And then these get extended, looking at different kinds of organizations, different kinds of roles. There are different kinds of agreements and contracts, and finally different kinds of legal concepts. And so if you take a look at the actual owl axioms, what I've kind of captured here is just kind of the basic sort of import. So if you might look and see, say ownership, for example, if you look at the owl axioms, it actually imports formal organizations. But if you kind of look at the transitive closure of the imports, ownership imports parties, and parties imports formal organizations. So I didn't put that explicit link there. It's kind of a transitive closure of each of these links. So this is really nice, organization that's already part of FIBO. And if we're thinking about how we would capture this, I mean, one of the things that when I refer to ontology metadata and relationships between ontologies, again, I'm thinking of these particular links that we have in this diagram on slide five. So already, languages such as DOL, the distributed ontology language, which is part of the OntoIOP project, can capture these relationships. So there is a construct within DOL that, on the one hand, talks about one ontology is a conservative extension of another. And also constructs that can talk about one ontology being a module within another ontology. So I didn't actually formally specify that. I can update my slide deck to capture that. And also the relationship between what we have see here on slide five and what we saw earlier in Mike's slide six. So there are these larger clusterings of these ontologies and looking at how those are related to each other. Although one interesting thing would be that there is a kind of a, if you look at that larger level, there would be a bit of a circular relationship here. If you look at the upper left part of slide five, you see legal core, jurisdiction, and legal capacity on the one hand, and these are all modules within the law grouping. And then you see contracts just over to the left, and that's part of the agreements and contracts cluster. And so if you kind of aggregated these up, you would see then that the agreements and contracts module would be importing something from law because it's importing jurisdiction. But you'd also see that law would be importing concepts from contracts and agreements because legal capacity imports concepts from contracts module. So although at this level you see a partial ordering, at that next level of aggregation you'd see some circularity. So I think that's something that we also want to kind of explore I think when we kind of actually explicitly represent this, say within DOL. So this is one of the action items I'm going to impose on myself here is looking at how we would represent all of these relationships between the ontology to the Infallible Foundations and that next level of aggregation within DOL. So using it as a test case of DOL. Moving on to slide 6, we kind of address the second point I wanted to talk about today, which is FIBO and ontology mapping. So if you go through the FIBO documents, there's frequent references to ideas such as semantics alignment or shared semantics or semantic agreement. And as Mike kind of already alluded to, there's this kind of relationship between FIBO foundation ontologies and other kinds of foundational ontologies, ontologies for time, for units of measure, other say, existing ontologies for addresses. In particular, Mike mentioned with respect to time, one of the other OMG projects called DTV, the Date Time Vocabulary. Now, one interesting little side note here with the Date Time Vocabulary. Currently, there is an axiomatization of DTV within with using common logic, and we have uploaded this into Calore. And we have done a preliminary modularization of the daytime vocabulary within Calore. And by the end of the summer, I have a student working on doing the formal verification of the daytime vocabulary with respect to other ontologies within Calore. So from this, we'd be able to understand how DTV is related to other time ontologies that are out there, but also be able to verify the consistency of DTV, and also being able to understand what all the intended model, how the model, actual models of the common logic axioms are related to the intended models within OMG. In addition, Mike mentioned that currently there isn't an official OWL axiomatization of DTV, but some of the work that I'm doing, say with Megan Katsumi, on looking at how we can have better techniques for coming up with OWL the kind of maximal OWL subtheories of a full first order theory. We've already been doing this with event ontologies in OWL, and I think one of the next steps that we might do is look at how we can apply these techniques to something like DTV and come up with a set of OWL axioms for DTV. And then once we have that, then we would be able to start using these ontologies, mapping them into FIBO, at least from the perspective of time. So there's not a lot that I could kind of formally say here with FIBO and ontology mapping, because to some extent we don't have the OWL axioms available for these other ontologies to do these mappings. But again, one of the things that I think it's a little early yet, but one of the things we may want to look at in the future is, again, how a language like DOL can be used to specify these meta relationships between ontologies and specify the mappings. And then finally, Mike also already mentioned some relationship to other standards, the REA ontology, resources, events, and agents, XBRL, GL. I think he also mentioned the ISO 20022. And so one of the things, actually, this might be a point for discussion. Mike can put it in the chat if he knows more. But with something, for example, like the REA ontology, I wasn't able to find some explicit axioms for REA, for example. And so before we really did some ontology mappings, we'd want to have actual computer interpretable specifications of these other standards. Otherwise, what this would do is would kind of migrate into one of the ontology-based standards sessions where we would actually do maybe attribute axioms to these standards. But then it doesn't become an ontology mapping project anymore. It becomes a national ontology design. It's kind of out of scope for OOR. Moving to slide 7. So Mike already did a great job of summarizing everything that's going on. And again, I call this kind of more proper ontology metadata in FIBO. So these are the more traditional properties of ontology. So there's a really nice FIBO annotation vocabulary. FIBO already uses, as Mike discussed, the OMG specification metadata ontology. And FIBO also makes extensive use of SCOS and Dublin Core in describing their ontology. So I'm going to leave this, because Mike already covered a lot of this, and leave this more for discussion. And then as Mike was saying, as you kind of post these and new ideas pop into our heads, if we go to slide 8, we have the discussion points. I have here two points for discussion. I mean, first of all, I guess from a content perspective, are there any obstacles to uploading 5.0 into something, say, like OntoHub or one of the other sandbox repositories as right now, as things stand? A second point being the logical issues that I looked at, the other metadata issues that Mike raised at the end of his slides. These are kind of like more logical or ontological issues. And so one question I think Peter is particularly interested in is how does this interact with some of the other software requirements that we have been discussing for the ontology repositories? And then finally, one point I didn't get up here, but which kind of popped up when Mike was talking. If you kind of look at what these other ontology metadata approaches, they really are being presented as ontology. So, you know, the OMG specification metadata is really being presented as an ontology, its own namespace, SM. SCOS and Dublin Core are themselves ontologies. If you look at OMV, the ontology metadata vocabulary, that also is an ontology. So maybe in one sense, we don't necessarily need to come up with an agreement to say, oh, this is the ontology metadata that we will be using within OOR. Rather, I think we should maybe just treat these as ontologies in and of themselves and say that, you know, anything we do within the OOR should be at least consistent with each of these different ontology metadata ontologies. So the OMG specification metadata, SCOS, Dublin Core, and OMV. So I think it maybe keeps us more flexible. So we don't have to say, you know, we are officially adopting this, but more just to say that we will be consistent with each of these ontologies for metadata. So that covers it up there. So I think we kind of want to move into the workshop part of this session. And maybe we can start just with, first of all, just some questions on Mike's slides or my slides. And then we can move on to some of the discussion questions again that Mike had and I had on my slides. So right now, are there any questions, say, for Mike Bennett on his presentation? I'm not sure if everyone got muted, but it's *7 to unmute.
Since there aren't a lot of us, I'll try to unmute everyone.
Hey, Mike?
Yep.
Uh-oh, my phone might be causing an echo. I put a question in the chat box earlier. One of your opening slides said the conceptual model was based to be use case neutral. And my question was, how should we interpret that notion of use case neutral?
Right, it's a good question. I think the intention
is... You don't have to answer.
Well, it's not as simple as it sounds, Jill. You're quite right. The intention is that whereas in developing an ontology for a particular use case, you would only include what you need for that use case. As well as being an ontology, this is intended as a standard, and so we intend it to be, perhaps neutral is the wrong word, but to cover more than one use case. Now, there is a school of thought that says that you should only include stuff which has some identifiable use case, and a lot of the stuff that's been removed from the scope of what's in the OMG specification is removed on that basis. But one use case which has nothing to do with semantic technology deployment is using FIBO as the common language for integration across systems or for creating a message backbone for terms between systems and so on. So for that one use case, it would tend to suggest that the FIBO ontology should include all the terms you may find in a typical reference database, for example. So the use case for securities would be whatever you're going to find in a security master file. Now, a lot of the OMG focus is more on semantic technology applications where you actually want a much smaller subset of the individual terms. So there's something of a balancing act between having a conceptual ontology that covers loads of terms and having operational ontologies that only have the terms you need for a particular application.
In regard to that point, when you brought that up, you know what popped into my mind was the dichotomy that's evolved in relational databases, right? You do your conceptual model, and then you have your physical model, and you get this dichotomy, this divergence, and you sort of lose all the good work.
Exactly. And, we've very much positioned this in terms of classic model-driven development and in terms of the Zachman framework. So you have your physical model, such as a database scheme or an XML message schema. You have your logical model, which is a design with a lot of reuse of common structures and so on, without reference to semantics, but with performance in mind. And you have your conceptual model, which should not take on board any performance or application requirements. So it's really a three-layer architecture that we're looking at. Although, of course, with OWL, you start with a conceptual ontology, and as soon as you have instance data, you have a physical model. So it slightly challenges the three-layer view.
That's
good. Yep.
Thank you. And Michael, the last question you asked about what are some of the, requirements on the metadata we need for ontologies, I put something in the chat box, and one of the items had to do with the use of the metadata or some representation thereof for performing actions in the OOR. And I guess from last week's conversation, being able to use some variation of the metadata representation as a communications mechanism.
Right, and I think one of the things that just became a little more apparent to me today was if we kind of think of these the metadata as just being metadata ontologies. So we have OMB and OMG SM as actually being explicit ontologies for this metadata. Then I think we can take it one level of abstraction up and just simply say that we can assume that the metadata will be specified using one of these ontologies, and so the queries would then be queries that use that particular set of terms. So the metadata is not going to be some special category of things; it'll just be incorporated as yet another ontology. That might make it a bit better in terms of an API perspective.
But then we have to be careful about self-referentiality.
Well, no, because it's just...
In the actual method calls, if you start using it in the way that I envision. But I don't think that's a big deal.
Okay, well, this could be something then for one of the upcoming sessions, I guess, would be how if we represent all the metadata using one of these metadata ontologies, exactly what will that look like? Right? How will the API actually pose a query? That's a good point.
Mm. Well, that's an interesting challenge with FIBO, because take the Dublin Core, for example. That's published as a RDF vocabulary, if I understand it correctly. But we've used Dublin Core terms reframed as OWL annotation properties. Now, I've no idea what the technical implications of that are, but our individual annotations will be what are called annotation facts, which are essentially instances of the individual OWL annotation properties, which are themselves essentially copies of what are not annotation properties in Dublin Core itself.
Mm, right, that's good. Yeah, that's something else I think that comes up as a big, as an open issue, I guess, then, would be that a detailed kind of analysis of the FIBO annotation vocabulary.
Mm.
Peter, you had a point?
Yes, actually I wanted to clarify with you on what you meant by using the metadata as an ontology, because I thought that was where we started out from all along. I mean, OMB was published as an ontology, and of course at the beginning we said we will use the OMB ontology, and we will study whether there are extensions necessary in the OOR case where OMB does not cover very well. And of course, now we have got other similar efforts like the SM vocabulary, CTS2, and so on. And a little earlier, we had the HL7 people over to tell us how the two fares. But I thought the short statement is, I thought all along we were going to sort of consider the metadata as an ontology. So I just wanted to clarify whether you thought we weren't.
I guess what I meant to make it a little more clear. Sometimes there's the impression that we want, like you said, we're going to extend to say OMB, and so the idea being that there would be a single metadata ontology that OR would use or somehow endorse or whatever. But I think maybe instead of doing that, the idea being that there are these multiple metadata ontologies available. And we have to definitely understand how these metadata ontologies are related to each other, but we don't necessarily have to force them all into one. We should be able to have an OOR where if people want to use some OMB terms, some OMG terms, terms from other metadata ontologies, like Mike mentioned, Dublin Core, right? That everything should work together. Everything should be able to work together. But that doesn't mean that there is a single metadata ontology for OOR.
So we have to develop a mapping between these metadata ontologies first?
Well, that's what I put here at 53 minutes, action item, detailed study of the relationships between these ontology metadata ontologies.
Yeah, I think this is clever. Thank you for the clarification. I mean, that makes a lot of sense. Beautiful. Thank you, Michael. Can you document it slightly?
Yeah.
More,
okay.
Just to get that flavor across, because it didn't when you first stated it.
So are there any other questions, specifically for Mike arising from the slides, or do we want to kind of move into the discussion questions that Mike had on his final slide? Maybe we could move Mike, do you want to maybe just kind of revisit your slide 14, and while I type in something that what I just was saying before, maybe you could pick your favorite open question and see where.
Yes. Let's wait for that noise to die down. My favorite open question, certainly from FIBO's perspective itself, is we have all these very atomic concepts in foundations, such as contract and agreement and so on. And we also have even more abstract partitions above that. We have the top level of John Sower's KR lattice, and we've been thinking for some time that we could probably make better use of some of the other partitioning in Dolce and so on. Really following John's idea of having underspecified high-level partitions which can be used to cross-reference terms between standards. And we've actually had some success doing that with the REA terms. So we've not only reframed the REA terms in OWL, but used higher level of abstractions, and in many cases, taken the REA concept as abstractions that we use elsewhere, not just for transactions. So that kind of alignment it's been very interesting and very challenging. But how do we manage the ongoing use of these kinds of what were initially essentially temporary terms that we needed to define the meanings of our terms? As other industries, as other ontologies become more mature or become published as OWL ontologies like the REA one eventually will, how do we make the best use of ontologically defined terms that are defined and owned and curated by the relevant communities of practice, whereas at the moment we have to at least have those abstractions in order to be able to give meaning to our own terms, but we want those abstractions to ultimately be deprecated. So that's the real interesting challenge for me, is the evolution of all these different terms in different industries as those become more more formally defined as ontologies going forward.
Peter, you have a comment.
Yes, I think Mike Bennett's question is great, and of course the fact that we are here, we hope OOR is the solution. So before anything else, do you think you can get, for example, the REA ontology to be uploaded to a certain instance of OOR and other things that you need, the daytime vocabulary, all uploaded to the same place? Then we can start thinking about, besides metadata, what are the value-added services that would help you get what you need?
Right. Well,
let's put it in one place first, which was the sort of core value proposition of OOR, is that when we can have ontologies logically in one go-to place, so that people can work on them.
I think definitely, and I think two reactions there. Firstly, I think REA and the OMG date time vocabulary would make two very good and very different use cases for doing exactly that. Secondly, as we looked at the scope of what's part of an OMG standard and what's not, and we've quite rightly removed from scope stuff that we anticipate being in other standards, so all of the address terms and country terms and so on, but the OMG folks have also slightly strangely smuggled in terms that are useful for other standards, and so part of what we're having to do at the moment is figure out what are the inclusion criteria for what's in 5.0 foundations in as an OMG spec and what isn't. And I think, to my view, the OMG side of it should really, I think it's right to dissociate itself from most of the terms that should be in other standards, and that if OOR is the venue for that, then, you know, one less thing for the OMG process to worry about, and one more formal place to manage those kind of things. And I think when we look at, particularly since DTV is an OMG specification, we can see this as a very collaborative effort as to how we manage common semantics using, you know, particularly John Sower's idea of underspecified top-level partitions and so on. You'll see that when we bring in the REA stuff, we'll bring in a lot of our high-level abstractions to go with that, and perhaps OOR is the place for all of that stuff to live, because, you know, the top partitions that we have in 5.0 originally are not included in the OMG specification at all, because different users of OWL want to use different partitions or no partitions, and what's coming through the OMG process is actually slightly closer to an operational ontology than I'm personally comfortable with, but that's all part of the learning curve we're going through. So if we can get everybody's agreement that we, you know, everybody on the OMG's agreement as well, that we use REA and DTV as test cases. I say they're very different test cases, because date-time vocabulary, the current OWL sort of proof of concept that's happening there, I could be wrong, but it looks to me very like an OWL model of an SDVR model of date and time, whereas what we really want is an ontology of date and time. Correct me if I'm wrong, and I hope I am. So that itself will throw up some very interesting results, no matter what the answer to that question is.
And yeah, I'd just like to add that one of the kind of initiatives we're going to be kind of focusing on within the Calore project in the next few months is kind of a big drive at what we're calling these kind of mid-level ontologies. And so we already have ontologies like DTV and Dolce are already kind of being incorporated into Calore, and the mappings between these kind of more foundational ontologies to the other ones is being mapped out. And so then what we want to do is to look at different pieces, and some of you already covered them in Bible. So, for example, addresses.
Yep.
So there's some work that Torsten Hammond did on kind of extending mirror topologies to cover kind of different features of different dimensions. And so you can talk about a city, and within a city there are postal codes. So these are relationships between regions. But then you can also look at linear features like streets and point features like a particular building. And then you can look at parts of that building. And so there's this idea of extending or using rather these mirror topologies, which are already in Colore, as ways of giving mappings towards these other address ontologies that are floating around out there. So that's the style of work that we're going to be focusing on over the next year or so.
Ah, well, can I chip in with an idea there? Because what you're doing there is very much what we were doing with the REA stuff. And the last 6 months, the thrust of our work in the EDM Council has been to focus in on getting the standard through the OMG, and that has taken us in a much more physical, much more pragmatic direction. And so I'm slightly frustrated not to be doing the work you've just described. In fact, we did do something on that with address. We came up with a different pattern, which I think you'll like, which distinguishes the very abstract concept of address as being an index to a location, and that would subsume network addresses as well as geolocations and postal addresses, and then a set of object properties between address fragments that are those kind of index information constructs and physical kinds of place like streets and towns and counties and so on. So that's just an idea, but more to the point, I think Colore is starting to sound like a better venue for what we have been trying to do at the council, because there's really me. We've really been struggling to really have the resources to do that kind of work. We did some really good work with REA, and we sort of put it on hold. We pretty much completed it, but we wanted to link on to the next thing, which is accounts and XBRL and double entry bookkeeping and so on. And the key to it all is exactly what you've described, is using high-level partitions and the next level down, the mirological terms and other kind of common patterns like that, which are even more universal than contracts and accounts and things. That's the key to getting meaning right, is linking everything to the abstractions of what they really are, rather than having them in silos. Perhaps there's some way in which we can take some of what we've been doing, bring that into the Colore universe, and bring that into the OOR universe as a venue, because I'm sort of frustrated that we're not doing as much of that kind of work as we had been doing, and we will need that firmly in place for everything that's coming up, derivatives, securities, and so on. Business entities was a simple enough problem that we could ignore some of those questions for the time being, but we can't ignore them forever.
Right. And I think you would be able to upload the FIBO Foundation's ontologies as they stand right now into OntoHub, right? Would there be any obstacles to that?
None at all.
Excellent.
Yeah, it's a very basic set of stuff. And over the next 4 or 5 weeks, we're revisiting, the decisions about what was out and what was in have been a little bit unilateral, and we need to take that to the broader EDM Council community. And for example, the address term, we had what I just described in the original ontology. All of that was removed and replaced with just a single proxy class called address. Some of the business users, Wells Fargo, for example, have complained that we removed too much, and please could we stick some of it back in. Likewise with identifiers and schemes and so on. The OMG folks want us to use standards that don't quite exist yet, so our versions of ISO 11179, and that should replace what's in FIBO. But right now, the folks who want to use the ontologies want to see some of that stuff stuck back in. So you may find that what we upload in 3 or 4 weeks may have a lot more in it than what's there now. As we kind of firm up, going away from one person's unilateral what's in, what's out, to a more documented set of inclusion criteria.
Right. Okay, great. So Yeah, so maybe we just might want to contact Till just to make sure. I've had a little bit of trouble uploading ontologies into OntoHub.
Right.
Yeah, so we might want to contact Till because we had some trouble uploading. So, but yeah, once you get those details settled out, then I guess that we'd be able to do that.
Good. Yes, I think if we upload what's in the final cut of Fibro Foundations, which will be 26th of August is the date we're aiming for, then that would be one to upload. I mean, welcome to upload what's there now, but it may change and it will certainly increase in scope between now and then.
Peter?
Yes, since we are experimenting, so when we upload, could we upload to OntoHub, Sandbox, Colore, etc., whichever is applicable? I think that will help us sort of arrive at conclusions easier. By virtue of them, I mean, there being in separate places, or their difficulty in one place but ease in another instance. I mean, would teach us lessons, I think.
I agree. Okay, so we could try multiple uploads. Yeah.
I just documented.
Okay, great. I think to you're coming back to Mike's slide 14. I think there is a lot that still needs to be done with versioning and URIs. You know, Mike alluded to that on, particularly on slide 11. I think there's still a lot of discussion going on. I know, like at ISWIC, you know, various ISWIC conferences, people kind of, you know, mentioned it a while ago, but then nothing's really been heard of lately. But it does pop up in kind of scattered ways. But I don't think the final story's been told about versioning in URIs yet. And I think that's something that we also need to address a bit more explicitly within OR.
Are we the people to solve the problem, or is OR just sort of a group to implement what, let's say, W3C concludes on?
Well, I think we're in a good position.
Probably not our battle to fight.
Right, it's probably not a battle to fight, but we can definitely be used as a way of, like you said, illustrating what, you know, current approaches and kind of identifying potential shortcomings.
Yes. Yeah.
I think it's something we want to keep in mind, but we have our other, you know, hot issues to kind of address first.
Yeah, there's a lot of action from... Sorry. No,
this actually came up in our hackathon session when we did APIs. One of the things we actually ran into is the URI. I don't think even BioPortal implemented that, and they still say, I mean, go to Perl to get your URI and things like that. But we determined that in OOR, and particularly whether it's on the hub or the extended version of BioPortal based OOR instances. I mean, we do want the URIs to resolve properly into the latest version of an ontology.
Mm-hmm. Peter?
Yes?
This is David Eddy. I don't know the other voice, but apropos of versioning, that it's not your responsibility, but you also have to leave the door open for it because of the issue of this stuff cannot be maintained manually. Just never going to happen.
Of course.
So it has to be the only places I've ever seen this work over the past 30 years is where this sort of stuff is automated into the normal process of people just if this vocabulary ontology, whatever, is extra work, it's not going to happen. So it has to be woven into the fabric of daily work, and that, so this falls into the versioning, change control, etc. So, my two cents.
Thank you. capture that into the chat as a reminder to all of us. That's important.
You want me to put that in the chat? Let's see. Ooh.
Yes, if you please. Yes. Yeah, the box to the left of the send button is the very bottom.
So this little next to the hand?
No, the send button, very bottom of the window.
Oh, right. Duh. Okay. Yeah.
Okay. Any other points? Any other points that people have?
So the URI conversation is suddenly starting to happen at the OMG as well. I think there's been three separate conversations and a whole email thread just started in the last couple of days about, you know, being able to have a URI that resolves the latest version as distinct from the current approach to a URI, which is also the approach the OMG takes to documents, whereby they always have a month and number fragment, which is quite horrible on its own. So there's a lot of conversation now about how we have a, as you see with, you know, W3C specifications, for example, a URI that represents latest version that then resolves to whichever one is the latest version. So that's really just starting to be talked about now, oddly enough.
Okay. So I think it's been pretty productive today. We have a nice list of concrete items to drive our work over the next at least few months.
Yeah.
If there aren't any other comments, we might just kind of draw that part of the meeting to a close and go to this other point on our meeting page. Just so then, any last comments that people want to have about today's topic?
Peter here, I still hope, I mean, we keep our focus on trying to get those three things we agreed at the strategy meeting in place, hopefully in 3 months, namely a set of metadata, a set of APIs, and some consensus on UI that could be used across instances of open ontology repository instances, whether it's Colore or OntoHub or our sandbox or SoCop or whatever. Let's try to arrive at tangible things on conclusions on these two things within the next 3 months from June 18th. I mean, that would be most wonderful.
Yeah, and I think one of the action items from today I wrote down here is, again, addressing these the ontology metadata ontologies. And so I think we can probably resolve that within that time frame.
Yes, that is absolutely wonderful. I mean, and of course, I mean, someone will need to upload those to, again, to OntoHub and OR Sandbox, for example.
Right.
To get them in place to work with.
Perfect. Yeah, I agree. Okay, so then just one point here, our schedule, upcoming schedule for meetings. So next week, July 9th, we have the regular monthly ORT meeting for planning and administration. On July 16th, we have our second OOR OntoHub Gatekeeper API hackathon session, co-chaired by Ken Bukowski and Till Mostakovsky. So right now we don't have anything for July 23rd or 30th, and there's also a question about whether we want to kind of take a break during August. We were within the overall OntoLog sessions, the Thursday sessions. There are no sessions in August, so people might want to, well, I guess we don't have to decide today necessarily, but since we haven't scheduled July 23rd or 30th, but definitely an issue that we need to at least decide by next week.
Yeah, and I also wanted to schedule an ontology-based standard session. We said we were going to do that again back in, I think, October or November last year, we said we paused that for the Ontology Summit. Now that the Ontology Summit is come and gone, it's time to go back, and there are a lot of things exciting to talk about, FIBO being one, Cuomo's resurrection of Cuomo's being another, the fact that Bob Smith and Lamar Henderson are here, they are sort of poising to get started in the building architecture domain. That's another, and also the fact that there's so much collaborative effort now, let's say, between Common Logic, Onto IOP, OMG, and so on. I think it's high time that we get all the ontology-based standards advocates together and at least do some planning on what's next for ontology-based standards. The reason why I'm bringing this up here is OOR had always wanted to be sort of, again, the go-to place where ontologies will be hosted or stored and accessed to support that ontology-based standards effort. So it could be, we can talk about this anywhere, but I mean, today is as good a day as any to decide. And since we already have something on the 25th, and if we are breaking in August, then the only two Thursdays left are July 11th and July 18th. I do hope we pick one of those 2 days and gather the ontology-based standards advocates to a powwow.
So you're thinking of having a kind of a organization a meeting for say the fall?
Right. Yeah. If we look at ontology-based standards as a mini series, for example,
right,
then it would be a planning session for the ontology-based standards mini series. It
okay.
probably is more than that, but
yeah.
But for now, I mean, that's as good a model as any.
Sure, we could do that on July 18th. On July 11th, I'm going to be at the Rule ML conference.
Right. Right. Yeah. Most people. Wait. So July 18th.
Yeah, that'd be okay for me anyway.
Yeah, we want most of the people at this on this call to be there. I mean, like Mike Bennett, definitely, and Bob Smith and Lamar Henderson would be interested. I mean, David, you're definitely welcome to join us. So if Mike, Bob, Lamar, David, you guys available on the 18th?
I'm in Vancouver, but I should be able to attend.
Is that a yes or?
Yes.
Okay, great, great. So, Mike, are Thursdays good for you?
Yeah.
Actually, we still wanted to sort of settle a meeting standard time, a regular time thing between Ontolog and FIBO, right? The fact that more and more people in Ontolog are involved in FIBO.
Yes.
Did you get any progress there?
Yes, we're definitely going to reset our regular time after the summer recess. Now, originally I thought we'd probably take the summer recess quite early, but we actually have calls through to the 18th and I think possibly the 25th. That's still kind of, I thought it would probably be too soon to try and rechange the time while we're in the middle of a set of calls that people have got in their diaries, but I thought it would be easy to do it before we start in September. But that does mean we still have overlaps for the next 3 or 4 weeks.
Can you be available on the 18th? I mean, you are a key player, evidently.
Yes, I think so. I'll just check if Vicky's available or Aaron's available to introduce our speaker that day. I'm sure there will be. So we're looking at 9:30 Pacific, 12:30 Eastern. Is that right?
Mm. So we definitely also want Lisa Kendall, I mean, among others, to join
good.
Us. So definitely. So could either, I mean, who's going to talk to her sooner? Maybe Michael or Mike? Either one of them?
I'll be seeing her over the next 2 weeks, including that day, in fact. So, yeah, I'm supposed to be working quite extensively with her for that 2 weeks up to July 20th. So, yeah, I can talk to her and make sure she's there. She doesn't usually go to the OCG calls anyway, so that won't be a problem for her. So, yeah, I'll talk to her, make sure she's there.
How about this Michael?
Yeah.
We pencil in for you and Elisa to co-chair this session.
Yeah, I can definitely share it on the 18th, yeah.
Yes, and the fallback position is, and if she's totally not available, then you chair, but we will look to maybe you and Elisa to co-chair.
Sure.
So maybe either or both of you, I mean, maybe Mike, I mean, you could sort of at least allude to the fact that that Michael will ping her.
Yep.
On this, yeah.
Good, yeah.
Nice, yeah, Michael, you ping Elisa directly. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, did you want, you also have here the July 23rd and 30th sessions for OOR. Did you want to pencil anything in for those?
Anyone? Have other sessions in mind. I mean, we still have next Tuesday to talk with. Oh, you're not going to be at next Tuesday's call.
No, I'm going to be on the plane for
right
UML. Yeah.
A lot of people will be at UML, so we should either decide on something or the thought is gone.
Yeah.
Oh, Ken just joined us. Ken, are you on the call?
Yeah, I am.
Okay, you have any suggestion for the 23rd or the 30th to run some of your regular OOR sessions?
23rd and 30th.
Those are two blank dates. We could consider. I mean, we could consider not scheduling things. I mean, this summer.
See, what do we have right now?
We don't have anything. We have next Tuesday would be a regular sort of admin planning type session. On the 16th, we have the second session of your OR Onto Hub Gatekeeper Hackathon.
Right, that's 16.
We can still think about it because, I mean, at least we will get together a couple of times. Michael, will you be joining us at the hackathon on the 16th?
Yes.
Ah, good. So at least we have one more chance. So if we can't come up with something now, then let's talk about it in the next 2 weeks. But maybe we should, I mean, now we have a lot of us here. Could we decide just that we will break for the month of August, just like
I think that's a good idea, particularly since we have a kind of a clear vision of what we want to get done, by September or so. So I think taking August off is not a big problem.
Great. Any objections?
No.
Great.
Good.
Yeah, for break.
Okay.
Well, we had a very productive meeting today. I think we have a lot of some good concrete action items and making quite a bit of progress, both on the metadata front and also on the content front for populating the different OR instances. So thank you, everyone, and everyone's welcome to attend next week's kind of planning. And also, don't forget, July 16th, the API hackathon session. This is here, Lamar. Will slides be posted? So slides are posted on the...
Can you find it? If you look at the page now, click at the refresh or whatever, there's a link at the top that says download speaker slides here. And this section will be gone shortly, but then afterwards you can always find it right under agenda and proceedings under the word archives. You'll find the slides, the audio recording, and the chat transcript as well.
Okay. Well, talk to everyone at the next meeting.
Thank you, Michael. Thank you, Mike. Great session.
Thanks, David. Thanks, everyone.
Yeah, thanks, Mike.
Bye-bye.
Yeah.
Bye. Okay. Bye.
Bye.